Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill, employee-owned and operated, and founded on the principle of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
But before we get into today's show, Linda and I like to kick off the episode with a question for each other. And that is, what is the best thing you ate in the past week?
Yeah, so my friend Caleb invited me over to dinner at his house and made this fabulous Asian-inspired dinner. But what was the best thing is that he had surprise pizza. So like halfway through the meal, he was like, hold up, guys. I got something else for you. And then he like walks over to the table with like a pan of like square style pizza that he made from scratch, dough and everything, and sausages as well as the topping. And we were just like, yes. But also we wish we like saved more room for the extra carbs.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to eat Caleb's food once or twice, so
yeah,
sure,
shout out Caleb. So, Iris, what about you? What did you eat?
So, I thought I was going to go lowbrow again and tell you about these delicious Indonesian beef barbecue flavored potato chips I had. But last night I actually ate out for once and had a fantastic meal. I went to Samson, which is a modern casual Thai noodle restaurant here in Hong Kong. All four dishes I had were great, but what really stood out for me was the pad see ew, because it was unlike any other pad see ew I've had. It had wagyu beef, whole fresh peppercorns, and a really good like meat and veggie to noodle ratio. And unlike your average pad see ew, it wasn't drowned in oyster sauce, but it had like layers of flavors. So really good stuff.
Awesome.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to today's interview because we touch on a topic that isn't discussed enough, and that's the gap between restaurant food and home-style food. I think the difference between the two is something we understand maybe within our own culture, but with the world becoming more global, with more and more cuisines being represented when you eat out, we can sometimes make the mistake of perceiving a whole country's cuisine on what we find on the menu of a restaurant. But of course, restaurant cooking is very different to home cooking, no matter where in the world you are, especially if you're trying a certain cuisine in your country rather than the cuisine's home country, as restaurants will probably cater to your country's palate.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are just so many misconceptions with different cuisines, but today we're going to focus on a cuisine that's very popular in the U.S., the U.K., and increasingly worldwide, and that's Indian food. We're super excited to have Chef Floyd Cardoz in the studio to tell us what Indian food looks like inside the home. And for those who aren't familiar with Floyd, he's an Indian American chef based here in New York City. He went to culinary school in Bombay, which is also where he began his career, studied at La Roche in Switzerland, then moved to New York City to work under Chef Greg Kuntz at Les Pinus. He's partnered with Danny Meyer to open Tabla. He's also opened North End Grill and White Street in downtown Manhattan and the Bombay Canteen in Mumbai, India. Last year, Floyd opened Palwala, a casual modern Indian restaurant in Soho, which celebrates his Goan Indian heritage and integrates Indian flavors and cooking techniques with local ingredients. He's also a cookbook author, four-time James Beard Award nominee, and season three winner of Bravo's Top Chef Masters. Welcome to the show, Floyd.
Oh, thank you, Linda.
Hi, Floyd.
Hello. I wish I was with you eating some dim sum right now.
Sorry?
He said that he wishes he was over there eating some dim sum in Hong Kong with you.
Oh, yeah. Come visit. So we know what is typically served at Indian restaurants in New York, but Floyd, can you tell us what do Indian families actually eat at home and how it's different from what's served in restaurants?
So when I came to the United States almost 30 years ago, one thing I didn't want to do was to cook Indian food, because when I went out to eat, the food I saw was not anything that I grew up with or even eaten. Indian food, like Italian food, and I'm sure like all other cultures, is very regional. It's if you come from a state, you eat food from that state. You almost never eat food from another state. And because the states are so wide and there was no power or electricity, people would eat food that was locally sourced within a 50-kilometer radius. So the Indian food people eat at home, and what I do at Powala is I've been traveling extensively in India, and I'm trying to find dishes that people celebrate and cook in their homes. Mm. So some of it is very simple. Some of it is a little more complex if it's for a festival or a celebration. And some of it is just, you know, a simple stir-fry of something or a rice dish. I have a rice dish with morels right now on my menu. And that's from Kashmir. You never see a rice, a pilaf with morels anywhere. And even if you go to breads, and actually Powala means bread seller, people think that everybody in India eats naan. I never ate naan till I was 18. I ate pav. Mm-hmm. My wife never ate naan till she was 18 or 19. She ate roti or lolis. It's another kind of bread, which is a little thicker bread. She ate puris. So wherever you are in India, the breads you make are very, very different.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I was fortunate enough to try Palwala on Monday. And there was a whole bread section. that was really cool, of all shapes and sizes. Of course, there was the typical naan and roti, but so many others. Floyd, could you talk about, you know, some of those other ones that maybe folks aren't so familiar with?
So the first one I'd love to talk about is pav. Now, pav is, if you look at it, someone said, oh, it's a bun. Well, yeah, it is a bun. It's like a Parker's roll. But what happened was when the Portuguese came to India in the 1600s, they came to Goa first, and they colonized Goa. And they were in Goa for almost 300 years. And when the Portuguese came, they brought their foods with them, and they brought pav, which is a very simple bread with yeast, flour, water, a little bit of salt. And the Goans would eat pav with their Portuguese-style food. They'd eat pav with their Indian-style curries from Goa, the Goan curries. And now, slowly over the years, this pav has traveled all over India. It's become synonymous in all Indian cuisines. You have pav bhaji, you have vada pav, you have keema pav. You have things that you eat all over the place with pav. But that's not the only thing we do. I do something called a tingmo. A tingmo is from the northeast of India, almost from Tibet, which is a steamed bread that looks like a cinnamon bun. And that's eaten, that works really well with curries. I do stuffed breads. And In India, you get stuffed breads, which are either aloo paratha, which is with potatoes, or gobi paratha, which is with cauliflower. Sometimes they do with they use daikon. I change my stuffings. Like right now, I have a potato and nettle kulcha. So I stuff the bread with nettles. I have a ramp. I've done ramp kulcha. I've done cauliflower. Mm-hmm. So anything that's seasonal and available locally, I try to stuff it in the bread and make a flatbread in the tandoor. Now, I also change I make a naan, but I make a very different naan. Naan traditionally is made with egg, milk, and also with baking soda and baking powder. I make a yeast dough, and I've left out the milk and the egg, so vegans can enjoy it too. And I do a rosemary naan, because I think rosemary, when it cooks in the tandoor with that smoke, works extremely well.
Yeah. What I noticed was everything was, like, all the breads were tasty by themselves, but entirely dippable, like you said, in any other dish to mix and match.
Yeah, you know, here in America, people like to eat bread first. In India, whichever state you may be from, you eat bread to sop up the sauce or the curry that comes with it. So if you're from the north, you'll have a very thick curry, and you'll eat a naan or a roti, so you can scoop it up and eat. But if you're from Goa, like I am from, your bread is, like, the roll is spongy. So you can just put it in the sauce. It just sucks up all the sauce, and the sauce is a lot thinner. Curry is a lot thinner in Goa. So you can eat your meat curry or your fish curry or your shrimp curry, whatever it may be, with this sauce.
Yeah, super tasty. I'm curious. We do live in kind of like an anti-carb age right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool that you just, like, you know, opened this restaurant and you're like, you know what, we're going to eat carbs.
You know, people love bread, and I think anything in limitations is always good. Now, the beauty of Indian cuisine is that we have, you know, it was never about a cuisine, and I think most Asian cuisines are that way. It's never about eating 10 ounces of protein. You know, fish, meat, yeah, chicken, whatever it may be. It was about having a balanced diet. So Indian food is kind of like that. So you have vegetables, you have legumes, you have dals, you have some rice, you have some potatoes, you have some vegetables, you have greens. So you could have 5, 6, 7 things on your plate. And you have all these chutneys that you add to it that makes the texture and... You don't get palate fatigue with mm-hmm. Indian food. It's like all Asian food. It's like, it's exciting. I want to eat some more.
It's like fun to eat, different spices. You're like exciting your tongue, and you're like typically with a larger group of people too to share.
Yeah, and Indian food is about sharing it with people. It's about getting a bunch of things on the plate and each one serving themselves, and it's almost tapas style. You know, it exists in India, but restaurants don't do that. Restaurants make the same chicken tikka masala and saag paneer and rogan josh and beef vindaloo. But, you know, I come from Goa, where you have a pork vindaloo. That's the original dish. So I make pork vindaloo. Mm-hmm. I make a chicken curry from Calcutta, or I'll make a carrot. There was this dish I had in Calcutta. It was carrots with this mustard gravy. I made that into a salad. So when I say modern Indian food, I look at the flavors and the dishes and kind of make it so it's more user-friendly. So my diners don't be afraid. It's like, oh, that's got too much of sauce in it. It's too spicy. It's too greasy. Mm-hmm. Indians don't eat that way. So why should everybody think you should eat that way?
So what do you think stops the, like, typical Indian restaurant from cooking this way?
Most Indian restaurants, I believe, are not about spreading the good news of the cuisine. I think for any cuisine to be celebrated, like you take French food, you take Japanese food, you take Italian food, it's the chefs who want to show the world that, come and look at what we have. It's this wide variety of ingredients, wide variety of dishes that you can enjoy and not be afraid of. Mm-hmm. Indian restaurants for the longest time haven't done that. In the last 3 to 4 years, that's changed. So now people are saying, you know what? I'm going to show you this salted fish salad that my family ate in Goa that you had never seen in a restaurant before. Mm-hmm. You know, or a dal, a simple dal, or do asparagus like you would cook a squash in India. I mean, there are things that you can do to make it easy. You don't have to use the ingredients from the land, which is hard to get. So you adapt and you see what is available. How do Indians cook in the United States? You know, they'll use Brussels sprouts instead of cabbage. You know, they'll use broccoli instead of cauliflower. So things like that make it very much more interesting. And I think restaurants are realizing now is that I don't have to have these 8 standard things on my menu. Mm-hmm. You know, I can have things that are much better.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with more of Feast Meets West.
I don't think there's anybody worthy to run this company but the people who built it. I have employees who've been with me for more than 30 years, and plus, each and every one of them deserves to be an owner. That's just the way it ought to be, and that's just the way it is.
This is Bob Moore. He and his wife, Charlie, started Bob's Red Mill almost 4 decades ago. Today, they offer one of the largest lines of organic whole grain foods in the country. And in 2010, on his 81st birthday, Bob gifted ownership of the company to his employees.
I'd received plenty of offers to buy my company over the years, but selling out never felt like the right thing to do. When the time comes to let someone else run this show, I can't imagine selling it to a stranger. Giving the company to my hardworking employees just feels right.
The company now has an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. Stock is put in a retirement plan for all of its employees. When employees retire, the company buys back their shares. According to the National Center for Employee Ownership, about 11,000 companies in the U.S. currently run as ESOPs.
It just shows how much faith and trust Bob has in us.
That's Bo Thomas, the company's engineer and maintenance superintendent. He's been with Bob's Red Mill for over 27 years and has put his 4 children through college in the process.
For all of us, it's more than just a job. And obviously, it's the same way for Bob, too.
Bob is still very active in the company. He's the president and CEO, and you'll find him working at the mill just about every day. Because when you love something this much, you want to be a part of it.
Well, I may have given them the company, but the boss part is still mine.
Bob's Red Mill is committed to sharing only the freshest, best-tasting whole grain foods on the planet. Learn more about their mission of good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're hosts of Ferment About It, a weekly journey of all things fermented on Heritage Radio Network.
Tune in on Mondays at 7 p.m. to hear about all things fermented, from sauerkraut to sourdough and all things between.
Support our show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming.
Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. Here in the studio, we have Chef Floyd Cardos. Floyd, what are some examples of popular or well-liked dishes you cook at home or that you eat at home that isn't typically found on the Indian menu?
So one of the things that I have at home very often, and what I have on the menu at the restaurant right now, is my grandmother's fish curry.
Mm.
Indian restaurants traditionally don't do much seafood. Now, India is a triangular country, which has got coast on 2 sides. And seafood plays a very important role in our diet. And my grandmom would make this fish curry using coconut and tamarind and chilies and coriander and garlic.
What region of
that is
India?
From Goa.
Goa, okay.
And she'd always serve this, when I was growing up, which I thought was this horrible homegrown rice, which was unpolished, parboiled. And as kids, we hated it because it had this texture to it, which was a little crunchy. And I sourced that rice in the United States, and I served it with that same rice. And I had some green mango in there. Now, we sell so many of that because people have not seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I do, which is very popular that I love and I had for dinner last night, was pork vindaloo, which is from Goa and is always done with pork. My family used to use it with pork butt, pork shoulder, but at the restaurant I do it with pork ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's where the modern Indian comes into play, whereby you don't get ribs as pork vindaloo, but I made it in a way that Americans can connect with it.
Yeah, and I had it. It was really tasty. So you grew up in Mumbai, and you spent your summers in Goa, is that correct?
Yeah. So every summer, me and my five siblings, so six of us, would be packed into the car, and my mother would take us to visit our grandparents in Goa, and we'd go for 6 weeks.
Oh, that's awesome. And so how would the home-cooked meals be different in Mumbai versus Goa?
See, in Bombay, it's being a big city was very different. In Goa, when we went, there was, like I said, there was no power. There was no electricity. There was no refrigeration. So my cook, my great-grandmother's cook, would go to the market every single day and pick up what was freshest available with the fishing boats come in, or to slaughter that day, what vegetables came from the farmers, bring that home and decide the menu. Now, we always had seafood at lunch, always. So it would be a fish curry, or it would be a fish, a fried fish, or a shrimp curry. And we'd eat the rice that my grandmother grew. And at dinner, it would be a meat dish.
Mm-hmm.
And that food was, you know, she grew her own pigs, so she would slaughter a pig and she'd make sauce.
So much respect for this lady.
Yeah, and I learned a lot from her because, you know, like most cultures, you know, we forget that today in the United States is that all beef is not beef tenderloin. Mm-hmm. You have oxtail, you have beef neck, you have liver, you have kidneys, and all these parts were used up. So when my grandmother slaughtered a pig, some of it was made into Goan sausage or chorizo from the Portuguese. Some of it would be made into salt pork that would be used at a later date because the family couldn't consume the entire animal. The blood would be used in a stew. You know, the innards, the lungs, the intestines, the stomach would be cleaned out, washed. The snout, the ears would go in another stew.
Yeah.
So you would have something every single day. And we would look forward to that.
It's like different variations.
Exactly. She had her own chickens. You know, we'd go to a coconut plantations, get coconuts that fresh coconut milk could be bought from, or mangoes, or bread baked from the baker, or even going to the fish market and buying these really teeny clams that she'd bring home and she'd make a soup or a pilaf with it.
Yeah.
You know, things that in most cultures they just throw it away, but we would look forward to those things.
Right. That sounds amazing. And also, I mean, in the, like, typical kitchen, you know, not everyone has a tandoori oven, right? You know, like, there are these methods that you cook at the restaurant. And then what are some typical methods of, like, cooking or equipment used at home?
So in my house, like I said, I never had a tandoori oven. So we have small planchas that we cook on. So my cook would make... If she made a chapati, which is a really thin flatbread, she'd cook it on the plancha, or she'd do a steak on there when we had steak, or she'd take a whole mackerel, crusted in salt, and salt roasted on the plancha. Or there'd be these small charcoal stoves that they'd cook on. You know, they'd grill sometimes on that.
Yeah.
I have at the restaurant a wood-burning oven, so I try to imitate some of those smoky things that they did in India. You know, people did deep frying, stir frying, pressure cooking.
Yeah.
Even roasting in the oven, which was a very primitive over a wood fire created oven, or they'd bury it in charcoal from the wood fire that she would cook in. And she'd make a biryani with that, or she'd make these baked beans with Portuguese style baked beans in these pots. Buried in the charcoal.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's not just like the ingredients that are, you know, creative. It's also the methods too, and always changing that up.
After the rice harvest, there'd be rice in many ways, in desserts, in breakfast, in, you know, lunch, dinner. We'd be eating rice. So when the coconut, when we make jaggery out of the sap from the coconut, you'd be eating jaggery with your pancakes. Mm-hmm. You know. Like, and our Indian pancakes were very different, but that's what you need for breakfast.
Yeah. So, did your grandmother influence you a whole lot in your decision to become, you know, a chef?
I think she did in some way.
Yeah.
But she never ever told me, like, she hated that I wanted to be a chef. It's like, what do you mean you're going to be a cook for someone? We have cooks. So she was very disappointed.
That's the Asian way.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, she would make sure she taught me how to eat a fish head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the good parts, where the cheeks were, where the throat was, where the collars were, how to get the tongue. Mm-hmm. You know, things like
the money
that.
Parts.
Yeah, even pig trotters.
Yeah.
You know, she taught us how to eat pig trotters.
Yeah.
You know, I made a stew today with baby lamb trotters. But things like that, she influenced, you know, she showed me the right way to eat things. Mm-hmm. But I think in a way, she sent that love for food to everybody in our family.
That's awesome. So where else do you draw your food inspirations from? And who are your role models? How did you end up, you know, in this line of work?
So this line of work came by chance. I was a biochemist, mm-hmm. and I happened to read a book called Hotel by Arthur Haley. And since I was young, I loved food. I loved to eat. So I would be hanging out in the kitchen all the time to try and figure out what was for dinner, what was for lunch, try and get a little extra so I'd hang out with the cook. And after I read this book, I was very intrigued by the whole hospitality world, and I told my mom, I want to go to hospitality school. So I go to hospitality school, and while I'm in hospitality school, I have to cook as part of the course. And I realized that I was really good. So my first internship in school was in a kitchen, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So that's what put me on this path to cook.
That's awesome. And you have your place in India. How do you divide your time between the States and...
So one of my goals when I left India was to make sure I go back mm-hmm. and do something for the cuisine, mm-hmm. for the restaurant mm-hmm. world over there. And over the years, I realized that people in India were eating less and less Indian food. People in India were going out more for foreign cuisines. And the only Indian food you'd get were these small hole-in-the-wall places, which did amazing food, but nobody would go and eat there. Mm. And when I told people we were opening this restaurant, people said, oh, Indian food is for our parents. It's not for us. Mm. So we decided to open the Bombay Canteen, which is going to be a fun, young, hip place using only local Indian ingredients. So we import nothing. Everything we use is indigenously grown in India. And so once we got the idea, that's what we were going to do. So now I travel to India every 3 months. We go change the menu, go travel around in India, always trying to get that meal that I've not eaten before. Always go to see, oh, wow, this place does this amazing breakfast. Or this place does this amazing Bombay duck, mm-hmm. which is this crispy fish. Always eat at those places. But going back to India and talking to my chef every week, and trying to just inspire people, because I find that chefs in the United States are very inspirational. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to teach people. We want people to come and work for us, and we want to give them the tools so they can be successful. And having these kids in India get the same opportunity that we get here is one of my goals. So I'm blessed that I have this opportunity.
Yeah. That's really cool. And you seem to be, thoughtful about changing consumers' perceptions of food and, you know, what is, just for example, at Tabla, I mean, I think you challenged everyone with like rethinking Indian food as fine dining.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was like a mission in itself, too.
It is my mission to make people love. To have an Indian restaurant on every main street like there is a good Chinese restaurant. You know, I want to go to the grocery store and be able to get spice base and spices that I can use for Indian food. And you can use for Indian food.
Yeah.
You don't have to be afraid of it. And I think in the United States, we're so lucky because our pioneering spirit in this country lets people experiment with these wonderful flavors. So the more people enjoy foreign foods, the better it is.
Yeah, so what's...
Actually, I'm curious. Why do you think Indian food has fallen out of fashion with the younger generation in India?
India's a country where we love to respect and ape foreign countries. Mm-hmm. And the philosophy for the younger people was like, I want something that's imported. And all these other restaurants would do imported food. And Indian food, every country goes through this where they think their food is not the best in the world. And I think it takes a few thoughtful people or people who with the passion to just show them like, hey, this curry is awesome. This biryani is the best thing in the world. You should be celebrating this,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And
that's what people are getting at today, because now they realize these flavors are familiar. They love them. They're not boring. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things happening about it. And our bodies are built for these exciting foods. So I think today they're slowly changing because Indian restaurants were not cool before. You know, we started to make it cool.
For sure. I think you single-handedly did a lot of that in New York, too. So what's next for you, Floyd? Any other projects in the works?
Yeah, there is another project I'm working on in India to come happen soon. It's something that's close to my heart. Can't really talk about it. But it's something that I'm wanting to do, and it's got some relationship to Pawala.
Okay.
I'd say in September, October, they'll be closer to announcing what you're going to do. But it's always going to be with Indian food, you know, because mm-hmm. I think there's so much to do with it. There's so many interesting things that's from street foods that most people don't even know exist.
Yeah. We'll definitely keep our eyes peeled. And I guess, when do you think consumers will have a better understanding of what Indian food is really like beyond the most popular dishes and how it's eaten on a daily basis by many families? Do you have like a prediction or
I think that's changed already.
Yeah.
You know, I see the number of people who come to my restaurant every day to see what they order. You know, initially people would ask, where's your tikka masala? Now they know I don't have tikka masala. People are eating my chili chicken. People are eating the dal. People are eating my chodis biryani. You know, people are eating my fish head curry when I make it. The stews I did tripe. I'm doing chicken liver, like the way the Parsis do in Bombay.
Mm.
You know, I do a masala omelet for brunch, which is onions, tomatoes, chili, cilantro. Something I eat every day, a dosa with an egg on it. You know, people are accepting these things. So
yeah.
I think people are slowly changing and realizing that, you know, this food is really good.
It really is.
Let's enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good. I can't wait to go back. And so that's it for our show today. For listeners who want to learn more about Pawala or follow your work, Floyd, how should they stay connected with you?
So the best way to follow what I'm up to is follow me on Instagram, which is at Floyd Cardoz, or follow me on Twitter, which is at Floyd Cardoz, or go to pawala.com, great way, or thebombaycanteen.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Floyd.
Thank you for having me.
I learned so much about Indian cuisine. It was really awesome.
Yes, thank you. Be sure to check out Pawala. And listeners, remember to check out feastmeetswest.com as well for past episodes, show notes, and more content. Also, go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out all the other great shows on the network. And we'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Yeah.